We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Seahawks Man to Man Podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the Tweet Machine. You guys know where to follow me at. I'm verified, all that good stuff. Chris, talk to the people.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206, and that's CKID206.
All right, we have a special guest with us on the podcast to talk NFL draft news. We have draft analyst for the Draft Network, the homie Jordan Reed, who's also the host of the Reed Option podcast. Jordan, what up, man? Nice to have you back for a second time on the show.
What's going on, fellas? It's a pleasure being here, man. Feels like forever since we've seen each other at the combine. Feels like 5 years.
Yeah, man. What was that? Last February, man, we're chopping it up in Indy. Man, been a long time, but man, been following your work since then. Really appreciate the insights and love it. I can't wait to hop into it today. You ready, man? Let's talk some draft stuff.
Let's do it.
Now, for you, I want to know what goes into your process of scouting. So, for example, I say I'm your editor or whatever. I say, Jordan, I need your top 10 receivers for 2021. What do you do? How do you start? And what are you looking for when you pop on the tape?
So it's really a position by position thing. You know, you're not going to look for the same thing in quarterbacks as you do wide receivers. So the first thing I'll say is there's certain characteristics that you're looking for in certain positions. And I'll just start off with my process. So the way we do it at the Draft Network is that we actually treat it like an actual scouting department. So everybody has a certain section of the country, but something that we did different this year was we split it up by conferences. So I had the SEC, the Big 12, and I have a bunch of FCS schools and also Division II and Division III. So there's a big database of players that you get, and you're responsible for scouting all those guys from background information to obviously looking at the tape as well. That's the biggest thing that you're looking for, and you're just piecing together pretty much different pieces of the puzzle. And then you're basically putting together resumes for all of these guys, and you're just keeping track of each one throughout the year. And like I said, you outline the certain characteristics that you're looking for in certain positions. And it's different based on the person. It's a case-by-case basis. So one scout is going to look for certain things in wide receivers that I may not necessarily look for in certain receivers. So you just have to really outline what your core values are as far as what you're looking for with wide receivers. Some of the things that I look for, obviously hands is going to be the big things that you're looking for. How just technically sound they are as a route runner. What is their awareness like when they're out running those routes? And then just how savvy they are as a route runner on the field. So that's just a quick peek behind the curtain of some of the things that I look for. And then also evaluation process as well.
What's difficult about scouting, whether it's offensive guys or defensive guys?
The biggest thing I would say is just understanding the player. And what I mean by understanding the player is something that I've learned, and I've been doing this seriously since 2018. So I'm not an OG in the game or anything like that. I'm still relatively new for the most part. But something that I learned is just understanding how to paint the entire picture of a prospect. And what I mean by that is get to know these guys off the field with their helmets off as well. So the guy that I always like to use as an example, and you guys are very familiar with him, is Malik McDowell. And mm-hmm. I made a huge mistake, and he really taught me something in the scouting process, just because I had him ranked as a top five prospect in 2017 when he was coming out. And obviously we all know about the ATV accident and what happened with that. But what I mean by painting the entire picture is just getting to know them off the field and just understanding what type of person they are with their helmet off. I can pop in a YouTube video and see that he's sacking the quarterback and he moves really well, but just what type of character do you have and just what type of person you are off the field?
Well, I think you're not alone there in thinking Malik was a top 10 guy, a top five guy. I think the Seahawks felt the same way. They felt that they were getting a top five talent with a 35th pick. And perhaps they were. They were probably also getting maybe like a top five guy with red flags that, you know, probably should have been seen before the draft. And with the pandemic, you know, throwing off a little bit of last year's evaluations with the pro days and then a good chunk of the season, guys opting out, a shortened season. How did your scouting process change because of COVID?
It was a little bit different this year, just because if you think about it, last year when COVID really hit, I think it was like early March, we pretty much were wrapping up the pre-draft process. The combine had already happened. You pretty much had everything as far as on guys' portfolio. But now with COVID hitting, I mean, there were so many guys that were impacted. You had guys that really opted out. So there's some players that you haven't seen since the 2019 season, like Michael Parsons and Ja'Marr Chase and Gregory Rousseau. So we really only have 1 to 2 years of tape to go off of those guys. But also, I love to say your latest tape is your best tape. And I think that is very true for a lot of prospects. But like I said, there's so many guys we haven't seen since that 2019 season. But there were some players that got better, like Zach Wilson from BYU was an example. A guy that pretty much was labeled as a fifth or sixth round selection coming into the year. And then obviously you guys see how much of an ascension that he has made this year. So things have really been impacted as far as from an off the field standpoint, but from an on the field standpoint, things are different. Just talking to some scouting buddies in the industry, they weren't able to go through schools at all. So you're not able to talk to the position coaches, the head coaches, and people that are in the building. So you're losing out on a key piece of information.
With those guys who, you know, opted out, was there anyone who really hurt their stock by doing that, do you think?
I wouldn't say necessarily hurt their stock. If I did have to say one player that may have hurt themselves is Gregory Rousseau. I think he really could have helped himself just because he's only had 1 year of tape. Now, obviously, if you're 6'6", 270 pounds, and you go out and get 19.5 tackles for loss and 15.5 sacks in your second year ever playing defensive end, there's going to be a lot of intrigue with that. But he didn't test overly well, which was kind of expected for him. But you wanted to see if he could repeat that type of production and really take that next step. And then a guy like Jalen Phillips, wearing the same exact number and the same exact uniform, goes out and has a similar type of success as him. And then on the opposite side of that, Quincy Roche, who was another player that probably will intrigue the Seahawks. We'll get into him a little bit later. But both of those guys had really successful seasons during his absence.
Now, I think Seahawks fans have convinced themselves that the scouting won't be as good for this whole class, you know, because of the pandemic and everything. I think that, I'm not going to lie, I'm going to reach into the minds of Seahawks fans and think they're doing that because Seattle has effectively punted on this draft. They only got three picks.
Yeah.
Right. But from what you've gathered, whether talking to other guys who do scouting or just in your own evaluations, it feels like, relatively speaking, teams have a lot of knowledge about this whole class top to bottom. Is that the sense you get or no?
Yeah, and the media kind of just over-exaggerates as far as the effects from the pandemic. Teams are still doing their homework. They're still able to find out information about a lot of these guys, just because evaluators and decision makers, they still have a very good networking pool and working relationship with a lot of these schools, whether they drafted players previously from those schools or they know people that they previously worked with. So you're really going to find out who has a really good networking pool as far as getting information on these guys, but also who really did their homework on a lot of these players and was able to really explore different avenues to get that information on the players that they end up drafting.
Now let's get into the Seahawks specifically. I've kind of outlined two approaches for them. There's maybe a happy middle in there, but let's focus on the two extremes. Extreme A is basically taking, hey, we got three picks, we're going to take three guys, right? We're going to take three dudes as high as we can and hope that A, all of them are good, but, you know, maybe at least our second round pick is a stud. Or the John Snyder special, as I like to call it, trade those picks into as many guys, as many lottery picks as you can. If I give you a raise and say, hey, you now work for the Seattle Seahawks, congratulations, welcome to our draft room, which approach of those two would you advise Seattle to take in 2021?
Well, I'm always a fan of team trade back, and you kind of take the approach of lottery tickets. And the more tickets that I buy, the more chances that I have of hitting. If I only take those three picks that they do have, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to win the lottery. But if I go and I buy, let's say, 7 or 8 tickets, I have a better chance of hitting it big. So if I'm Snyder, I definitely do look to trade back.
Is there, because the reason I'm a little apprehensive of that strategy is the risk of, like, taking a lot of swings on guys who probably ain't going to make the team. I mean, you know, the hit rate on 6th-round picks, 7th-round picks, especially when they're trading back from 56 versus a year like when they took Malik, they started with like 26 and then flipped all that and ended up getting like 4 third-rounders. Now they're probably looking at, if they do trade a bunch, they're ending up with some 6s or some 7s, guys who their chance of making the team are low. Are you afraid of that risk with that strategy, or does it not matter because, you know, a lottery ticket is a lottery ticket?
I mean, you can't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket, right?
Oh, that's
6 or 7 round picks. You never know, especially when you're doing your homework on some of these guys. And it's been a while since that, you know, Snyder had that great run of where he was finding guys on day 2 and day 3 where that was churning out as far as being successful players. But like I said, the only way you'll win the lottery is if you buy a ticket. So I'd rather take my chances of trading back and getting those, you know, 7 or 8 picks and taking a bunch of guys in 5th, 6th, and 7th round, as opposed to having what, a 2nd, 4th, and a 7th round pick, mm-hmm. which is what they have right now. Just, that's a lot of pressure on yourself, as far as putting a lot of pressure on your team. And the Seahawks already don't have a lot of depth, in my opinion, as it already is. So I think they can help themselves by trading back and just taking a shot and throwing darts at the draft board.
Taking a shot. Okay. It sounds like you are, I'm not saying predicting, but forecasting that Snyder's going to trade back. Is that what we're hearing here? Do you see that happening?
If I were him, I would work hard to trade back, just because I think they have pick number 56 in the second mm-hmm. round mm-hmm. right now. So I think he could trade back a couple spots and recoup maybe a pick in the 60s and get another in the 3rd round. I think that would help him a lot.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. I want to look at the offensive line, centers, for most part, because that is a position with Ethan Posick. There's still question marks about his development. He's going into year 5, and he just became the starter last year, per se. Where's the consistency? Now, for this draft, we just talked about COVID happened, not a lot of film out there. There might be question marks on some of these players, but who do you see at 56 that can come into Seattle and start right away, whether it be helping in the run game, making sure Russ is happy? Because at the end of the day, Russ wants to win a Super Bowl this season, not next season. He wants to win it now. Is there anyone in the 2nd round that could potentially come in, be a starter, and help this team moving forward?
Well, one thing I will say about John Snyder is that he's not afraid to go against the grain. He proved mm-hmm. that with Jordan Brooks
yep.
a couple years ago when he selected him in the 1st round. So he's not afraid to go against the grain. It doesn't really matter what level of football that they play in. He just wants to bring in guys that he think can be productive. So one guy at 56 that I think he could be a fan of, his name is Quinn Meinerz from Wisconsin Whitewater, a player that he's created a big buzz about himself down at the Senior Bowl. You see him with his stomach out, creating a lot of buzz about himself. But he's a good football player. And coming into the year, once again, he was one of those players that was heavily impacted by COVID. He did not have a season at all last year, coming from the Division III level at Wisconsin Whitewater. But I think he can be a day one center, or he can be a day one guard. He primarily played left guard at Wisconsin Whitewater. But the biggest issue that you have with those small school players is, how do they play when they get that bump up in competition? So him going out there and playing as well as he did at the Senior Bowl, I think he helped himself a lot. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being a 2nd round pick. Now, people may say 56 is a little bit rich, but like I said, John Snyder isn't scared to go against the grain, and he's going to stay true to his board. And if he likes a player that's there that he feels as if can help the football team right away, it would not surprise me if Quentin Meinerz is a selection.
Now, what if they take the lotto and they go deep in the draft and they get a 6th or 7th guy? Is there a project there that the Seahawks, because you're very aware that the Seahawks, they do like taking on projects, bringing in guys that they can mold and form in the next 2-3 seasons, and they end up becoming the starter. Are there guys in that 5th, 6th, 7th round that can come in, learn the process, and then build their future off of that with the Seahawks?
Yeah, so one guy that I like a lot, and he's not getting a whole bunch of buzz right now, but I think he can go on to be a very productive, maybe not starter, but maybe some good depth for you. His name is Trey Hill. He's from Georgia. And Georgia always seems to have that one interior offensive lineman that goes on to have a successful career, whether they're drafted early or whether they're drafted on day two or day three. A guy that I liked a couple of years ago coming out was Lamont Gallery. The Arizona Cardinals ended up taking him in the seventh round, I believe it was. And I think Trey Hill could go along as similar lines as far as a player that could turn into really good depth. And it wouldn't surprise me if he goes on to turn into a starter at center or guard.
Let's look at the right tackle. Same situation. If the Seahawks are going for the second round at 56, who potentially could they land that can come in? And I'm not saying take Brandon Shell's spot because he did a hell of a job last season. But Pete, he loves to compete. He loves guys going out there fighting for a job. If there's someone that can come in and challenge Brandon Shell right off the top for that right tackle position, who might that be?
Yeah, there's quite a few guys that I think they're going to like at that spot. And one guy that I think they're going to have circled that has guard and tackle flexibility, his name is Jackson Carman. He's from Clemson. He has that big body that you're looking for. He can play inside. He can play outside. And he protected Trevor Lawrence blindside, very successfully over the past few years. And he reminds you a lot of Deion Dawkins when he was coming out of Temple a couple of years ago. And I'm a big fan of Dawkins, and I think he compares very favorably to Jackson Carman. So keep an eye on that for 56. And with this being a very tackle rich class, it wouldn't surprise me if some guys do end up slipping back down the board, whether it's a Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa, which may be a little bit rich for him, Brady Christensen from BYU. That could be another player that interests them as well. But one player I think is going to be very high on their board, maybe not necessarily at tackle, but at guard, is Deonte Brown, the interior offensive lineman from Alabama. He has that big body at around 345 pounds. He just likes to knock people around. And one thing that I love to say about Deonte Brown is that if I was a rich or famous person, he would be one of the first dudes that I hire to be my security ever walking around somewhere, just because he's one of those dudes that just wakes up and chooses violence, for lack of a better word. So I'm a big fan of Deonte Brown. With the downhill running game that Seattle likes to impose, I think Deonte Brown would be a fantastic selection at 56.
Oh, we got a bunch of names there. I'm sure Seahawks fans and listeners of this podcast are really excited about some of those guys you mentioned. But the fun question is, how do you...
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
How do you study offensive linemen? And Mike, he dropped me this gem three years ago? Chris, if no one's saying their name, no one's talking about them, they're doing a really good job. Is there any insight you can give us on how you watch O-line play and what separates elite from not so elite and good and bad? What's some of the gems there?
Yeah, and I think it was Mike Tice that said this quote when he was back, and he was the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and he was like, offensive line play is kind of like the engine of a car, and you never notice it until things go wrong. When you pop that hood up, if it's smoking, you're like, man, what in the world is going on with my engine? But whenever you crank that car up, whether you're warming the car up in the morning or if you're just out for a morning or evening drive and it's running fine, you never really worry about your engine. So I always like to come back with that quote with offensive line play. But the big thing that I say about offensive line play is that you have to understand the type of scheme that they fit best in. So you have a zone scheme, which is more reliable on your athletes, and you want them to win with angles as opposed to your man gap power guys, which is what Seattle really likes to execute, of where it's just a body on a body and you're just trying to overwhelm people. So just understanding the scheme. And I can go into a lot of specifics about offensive line play just because there's so many different angles as far as how you can evaluate it. Hand usage is something that is big. Awareness, of course, is something else that is big. How well they move is another angle that you can use. But the biggest thing that I would say is just the type of scheme that they fit best in.
You know, with O-line play, staying with centers, and specifically smarts and IQ is something that ends up on all the good guys' scouting reports. How do you assess that from afar?
Well, the big thing that is different about college football now is that nobody's huddling. Everything is so signal-based, and that's the big adjustment for centers and also quarterbacks as well, going from the college game to the pro game, and that everything is based from the sideline. Coaches are doing all the thinking from the box. They're calling the play. They're calling the protection. they're doing all of these things for these players. And basically they're like robots. They're like, just go out and execute this play. I've already set you up for success. But in the NFL, we know that these centers, they're pointing out protections. The Mike linebacker is really where the protection starts. And then if there's a certain blitz or if the picture is different, you have to change everything up and you have to communicate that with the quarterback. So awareness and savvy is something that's really hard to evaluate, especially with centers, just because everything is so signal based from the sideline with the college game. But that's why I said getting that type of access is really difficult from a media standpoint, getting guys on the whiteboard and just understanding what they understand about the game. That's just something that we always don't have access to. And we really have to rely on what we hear from NFL teams.
Yeah, I think my introduction to that is the 2018 draft. The Seahawks took Alex Magoo, quarterback at FIU. And we were just talking one day, maybe for an interview, I can't remember. But he was telling me he had never, before he got drafted by Seattle, he had never called a play. And I was like, what do you mean you never called a play? And he was like, well, I just looked to the sideline. Coach does a thing. He does something like this or whatever. And he's like, I know my assignment. And the receivers all knew theirs too. So I was like, wow, really? And then I think some receivers were telling me the same thing the next year. They were like, yeah, I came from blank school. I looked to the sideline. My coach says, puts his thumb up. All right, I know my route. Like, are you factoring that in too with the assessment of some of these guys that like they're processing so much of the hand? It's hand holding essentially. Like, are you processing that as well when evaluating these guys?
Well, it's kind of hard for us to do that from the media standpoint, just because, of course, we're not in private meetings. We can't put them on the whiteboard. We can't see what their IQ levels are. But I think the great thing about the NFL game now is that everything is going back to the college game in a sense. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teams that are actually running no huddle now. I wouldn't say very few teams huddle. A lot of teams still do. But as far as the hurry up tempo, receivers not switching sides, the limited formations that they're running, and then things of that nature. So the game is really evolving back to the college game, as opposed to about 15, 20 years ago. You were seeing these heavy personnel sets. You're seeing a more run game oriented type of offense. And yes, the Seahawks are still kind of in that archaic style of offense, but I think you start to see more college type of concepts and playing styles being involved and really evolving into the game today.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is throwing like shovel passes to his tight end, you know, at a bunch of formations, and DK lined up on the left side of the field like 90% of the time as a rookie, which is good, though. You're right. That's, you adjust to your talent. You know, you see more quarterbacks who played all shotgun in college before, you know, they would ask like, hey, you got to do under center as a pro. It's like, well, if he sticks at that, you know, why don't we, you know, adjust our, you know, scheme a little bit. You can see the Browns doing some of that with Baker, like adjusting to what makes Baker comfortable. Let's go to the other side of the ball, though. Let's jump into the cornerback class. Just with the class in general, is it top heavy with these guys, or is there some depth to be found for a team like Seattle that really needs a corner?
I think there's a lot of depth, honestly. And you hear about the top three guys and Caleb Farley, J.C. Horn, and then also Patrick Surtain II. Those are really like the headliners of the class. But I'm really impressed with this cornerback class. And we know the one thing that the Seahawks covet at the position is length. And I think there's a lot of guys in this class that they really are going to be able to choose from. Now, with that 56th overall pick, again, that kind of throws a wrench in a lot of this, just because I think those top three guys are probably going to be gone around the top 20 with Farley's injury. Now, I would have said prior to the injury, I would have said all of them would have went in the top 15. That would be my best guess. But it's kind of hard to gauge where Farley's going to go right now. But with the Seahawks, they covered that length. Just because of that cover three scheme of where they play that saddle side technique, putting their back to the line of scrimmage and being able to react coming back downhill. You're talking about guys like Efiatu Melifonwu from Syracuse, about 6'2", 200 plus pounds. I think he would be a really good fit if you're looking for somebody maybe in that fourth round at that number 129th pick. Keith Taylor from Washington, I think he's somebody that they're going to have a lot of interest in as well. So they're going to have their pick of the litter, and then being able to replace Griffin on the back end now that he's went down to Jacksonville, they're going to have their pick of the litter. Like I said, this is a really deep cornerback class.
I've done a couple mock drafts now for The Athletic where I've taken my man from Syracuse. I'm not going to try to botch his name. You said it right. We only need it once on here. I've taken him twice, I think, and some people have mentioned to me that, like, that's a guy Seattle will be interested in. I want to go a little bit deeper on him. What are the pros if he's there, like, 56? Or if, like you said, even if they trade back and take him at, you know, 66? You know, what are the pros if they take him? What are the cons of my man from Syracuse?
Very athletic. That's the thing that really stands out about him. Of course, his older brother, everybody knows, was Obi Melifonwu. I believe he was a second-round pick a few years ago. So he has those bloodlines previously. But don't base his evaluation on him. just because he flamed out of the league. That's something that happens a lot with a lot of people for whatever reason. But very long type of corner, great ball skills. I love a lot of the things that he brings to the table. Very interested as a tackler as well. That's something that you worry about with those long corners. Very good with affecting and condensing and squeezing those throwing windows. He uses length to his advantage. I think he's scheme versatile. He can play in cover one, press man, but also he can play in cover three, turn his back to the sideline. Like I said, driving back downhill, he can run. He's a 4-4 guy all day long. So as far as what Pete Carroll covets in his secondary guys at cornerback, I think he's a guy that, like, if they had a first-round pick, it wouldn't surprise me if they take him there either. I think they're going to be that high on him.
Let's jump to the offensive side of the football and look at the wide receiver class, because the Seahawks, they have found their gems in wide receivers. They have DK and they have Tyler Lockett. But David Moore, he's gone. They need someone in the slot. Who in this draft fits the profile to come in and just be a guy that can get loose in the slot, create separation, catch everything, and just do his job to a level that only elevates DK and Tyler Lockett, that pushes this offense forward when they do allow Russ to throw the rock?
One guy I think they're going to have circled with the red Sharpie is Elijah Moore from Ole Miss. I think he's a player that they're going to have a lot of interest in. Lane Kiffin came in and he knew that right away, like, this is my guy. Like, he pushed the ball to him, had nearly 100 catches last year, over 1,000 yards, double-digit touchdowns. He was everything for that offense. And I think he was kind of locked a little bit as far as what they allowed him to do. And I think in that offense in Seattle, they're going to allow him to move around a little bit more than what he did and allow him to play down the field a little bit more too, just because we know that Russ, he thrives off of play action. I think he's very good with that, taking those deep shots down the field. And not only DK and Tyler are able to do that, but I think Elijah Moore will be a really good mixture as far as in the slot. He also can play outside too.
I think DK would really appreciate that for the most part, considering those guys were teammates at one point in time. And I did see a highlight of him. He ran a beautiful slant go, which a lot of people refer to as a slogo. How would you grade his route running and how that's going to translate when he gets into the NFL? Because he is going to land on an NFL team. It just depends on who.
Fantastic. I mean, he's an outstanding route runner, very polished. And like I said, he was kind of locked in that offense. They ran a lot of perimeter screens, which is just quick throws outside. And they really like to get the ball to him as quickly as possible, just because, I mean, he doesn't have any ankle bones. That's what I like to say. Like, these dudes look silly out in open space. And the Seahawks need that. They need that type of firecracker on offense that can dominate the short to intermediate areas, just because we know DK is going to thrive deep. That's really where you want him going. He's a north-south type of wide receiver. You really want him getting on that runway and attacking down the field. Tyler can attack all three levels of the field, and Elijah Moore can really be that guy underneath on some of those crossing routes or those digs across the middle of the field of where he can really eat both of those guys. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of this fit if they do end up taking him at 56.
What's one con that he or one thing that he can work on that's not as polished yet? Because, of course, there's always the good, but what about some things that he needs to just work on just to make sure his game is well polished for when he gets into the league?
Just playing through contact over the middle of the field. I think that's something that he needs to work on a lot. He's constantly rerouted a lot as far as when he's trying to attack the second and third level. I think he needs to understand how to use his hands and dip and rip a little bit better to avoid those linebackers that are what I like to call trying to wall him off and just make him take a wider path than what he normally has to. So just playing through contact a little bit better and understanding how to get other guys' hands off of him.
Wait, this is all I need to know about whether they should take Elijah Moore. Is that the man who he pretended to take a pee in the bowl game? Oh, yeah, okay.
Fire
take him. Yep. Take him. Because DK did that as well, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Take him. That's all I needed to know. I just needed to make sure that was the guy. You had a tweet. I have it bookmarked because it's something I've been thinking about for a while now. It's about receivers on day two. Being baked the sweet spot. I think you screen grabbed all the receivers taken on day two of the last 4 years, and there's just studs in there. I'll probably share the tweet out when this drops, but it's got guys like Cooper Kupp and Juju in 2017, 2018 class at like Sutton and some other Chark, other guys, 2019, DK, AJ, Debo, Terry McLaurin. Like there's just guys. Why do you think that has become like the sweet spot for receivers?
Well, I think with receivers, you can find production from those guys. I wouldn't say anywhere. I wouldn't say day three, but day two, that's really where you find your guys that maybe slipped for various reasons, whether it's red flags or injuries or if guys just have questions about them. And even going back to last year, y'all, like Denzel Mims, LaVisca Chenault, T. Higgins, the list goes on and on of some of these guys that you're able to find in the second round. And there's not a lot of pressure on them to come in and contribute right away, like a first round guy, like a Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs. So, like I said, I like to call it the gold zone as far as where you can find some of those wide receivers on day two. And I think it's going to be a similar situation this year. And you have your first round guys this year, and we don't have to go over the names as far as who we see as those top guys, like Ja'Marr Chase and Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle. I think those are guys that are comfortably going to go somewhere in the first round. But second round, I mean, you have Tylan Wallace, Terrace Marshall, Rashad Bateman. The list goes on and on of some of these players that you're going to be able to find in the second round. I think it's going to be a repeat of what we've seen over the past 4 years.
I have a theory. I want to let you know. Tell me what you think about it. It's the rise of like all this 7-on-7 stuff and basically turning into the equivalent of AAU for skill position guys in football is going to increase ready-made NFL quarterbacks, but really these receivers, freak athletes, just guys who can ball, just coming in ready. Because it feels like every last like 3 years, it's been loaded receiver class, loaded receiver class, loaded receiver class. Do you think this loaded receiver class trend is going to continue? And if so, is 7-on-7 playing a role?
100%, just because they're getting so many reps. And if you think about the highlights you see from the high school circuit, nobody's playing full contact. Nobody has pads on. Everything's the 7-on-7, whether it's, you know, Rivals or 24/7. These guys are actually traveling the country now with these 7-on-7 tournaments. So they're getting so many different reps. And if you're an athlete, the first position that coaches are going to put you at, a running back or wide receiver, nobody's really playing defensive back unless you can't catch. That's the only time they really transition to that side of the ball. So you're going to play wide receiver or you're going to play running back, sometimes even quarterback, depending on how well you throw the ball. So the 7-on-7 era definitely is helping.
How tempted are you to go out there when you're watching 7-on-7, throwing a jersey and go see what you got, man? I know you see it sometimes and think, I can get out there and compete with these young fellas.
Hey, man, the only time I get out there is at the family reunion. Man, I'm all-time quarterback. That's the only time I get out there. I'm retired, man.
Okay. All right. Just had to throw that out. I wanted to see what you said, man. You're good.
All-time QB at a turkey bowl. That's what. Yeah, there you go.
That's it.
I want to talk a little bit about QBs, and we'll put a Seahawks spin on this a little bit, but they're just the talk of this draft, as always, everyone trading them and trading up for them. You know, how do you rank maybe like the top? Who's worthy of taking the first round pick on? I don't even want to put a number on it. Who's all the guys you would take in the first round this year?
The guys I feel comfortable with taking in the first round: Trevor Lawrence, of course. We don't have to spend a lot of time on him. We know he's the real deal. Justin Fields is my second ranked quarterback, and you guys have seen the stuff that's come out about him, the noise that's come out about him. He's been my second ranked quarterback forever. Zach Wilson is my number three guy, and then I have Trey Lance. After that, those will be the four guys that I would be comfortable taking in the first round, just because. The biggest thing with me is that you have to have some type of mobility at the position, just because if you think about all the quarterbacks that have come in successful and been successful, over the past 2 years, all those guys have had some type of mobility. And if you're thinking about the 2018 class, think about the one guy that really flamed out. It was Josh Rosen. And if you go back to a couple of years ago, the one guy that flamed out was Dwayne Haskins. And what is the common denominator with both of those guys? They just weren't able to create off script. And if I'm the offensive coordinator, I have to have a quarterback that can make me right if I have you in the wrong situation. That's why I think players like Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, who has some type of mobility, Josh Allen, we've seen how well he's been able to develop over the past few years. And, you know, some of these other players, Justin Herbert last year, Joe Burrow this past year, all those guys have some type of mobility of where they've been able to just escape if there's a lot of clutterness. And then if there's some muddy pockets around. So just having that type of mobility, I think all those four guys at the top right now, they have that. And then they're very good throwers of the football as well.
So it must be blowing your mind then to hear that the Niners are going after Mac at number three. You don't believe it? Why not?
I don't believe it. Just because I put it this way. What does Mac Jones give you that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't? There's not a lot of things that you can list besides durability. And we still don't know how healthy Mac is going to be on the next level, even though he hasn't missed no games at Alabama. Just I can't think of more than three reasons or three facts that Mac Jones give you that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't. Now, if you think about Justin Fields, think about the upside that he gives you immediately at the position. And I can go and list the same exact things for Trey Lance as well. So I just don't believe the Mac Jones theme to three. just because of the reasons that I outlined. And why trade up for a guy like that if he's not a significant upgrade besides the financial standpoint of basically just resetting the clock as far as his contract? So that's the big reason why I don't believe the Mac Jones at three to the 49ers team.
I'm with you on the mobility part, because that's kind of my number one, not number one thing, but like, you've seen these pass rushers, man. Like, you can't get away from these dudes. Like, no, you got no chance. But it wasn't always like that. Like, there's Matt Ryan's and Tom Brady's and, you know, more stationary guys. What do you think prompted the change that you, like, need to be mobile? Now, when did that, like, what prompted that change, do you think?
Just the athletes, the disparity of athletes between defensive linemen and offensive linemen. And prior to the offensive tackle class we saw last year, the offensive line classes were not very good. So what you're seeing is that it's starting to level out a little bit more now. But, I mean, you got guys like Myles Garrett and Joey Bosa coming off of the edge. You just can't be a statue. And like I said, these Matt Ryans and, you know, Tom Brady's a super outlier, but Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers, all these guys they're a dying breed. As far as what I mean by that is being able to win strictly with your mind from the pocket. That's just a dying breed. And the big thing that I like to say with quarterbacks now, why it's such a dying breed, is that limited practice time. And think about Phillip Rivers coming into the league, Tom Brady coming into the league. You having three-a-days with these dudes of where you're going out. You have unlimited practices. You have unlimited practice time. But now you can have – I don't even know if they can have two-a-days no more. I don't know the exact schedule as far as the layout of what they can do. But you have limited time at the facility, not only in college but also – in the NFL as well. And then the patience with these guys is slim. Like, if you're not turning out in 2 years, we finding a new dude to replace you right away. The patience isn't there with guys who develop anymore, and just the practice time, the disparity between that when some of those guys were coming into the league is so much different now with some of these younger guys.
Yeah, I feel like every offseason we get reminded by one of these defensive linemen just what freaks they really are. And whether it's they pushing Yukon Denalis or jumping off of rooftops and saving women from burning buildings, I swear it's just always something that just reminds us, like, yo, the guys coming off the edge are different. Like, and you need to be able to move your feet to get away from those guys. But obviously the Seahawks aren't in contention for any of those top guys. But I think you and me are in agreement here that, like, teams should just be taking quarterbacks, you know, pretty as often as they can, just because of what lottery tickets they become. At what point did you kind of develop that, you know, like, hey, you guys should take a guy, even if you don't need a guy, because of what he could become later?
It's such an important position, man. Like, if I was a GM, I would take one every 2 years, just because you never know when you're going to hit on one of those guys. And I'm a firm believer in that the backup quarterback spot is a top 10 value position on the roster, just because it could derail your entire season if your starter goes down. And, you know, the Seahawks have been lucky with the durability that Russell has been able to have. And they haven't really took the backup spot seriously because of that. You know, you got guys like Geno Smith and some of these other players that they have had on the roster. And I'm of the belief of that. Once again, quarterbacks are like lottery tickets. You never know when you're going to hit on a Russell Wilson or a Dak Prescott or somebody like that. It completely changes the trajectory of your entire roster. And the biggest weapon in the NFL is having a cheap quarterback. And the Seahawks did the blueprint this in 2012 when they took Russell Wilson. You were able to pay guys like, you know, Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor top money just because you had a cheap quarterback at the time. And we both know, like, the Seahawks were supposed to be a dynasty. They were 1 yard away from being a dynasty, and they probably are going to win some more rings after that as well. But that's a subject for another day. But just talking about the weapon that a young quarterback, also a cheap quarterback, is to roster building, I think that's something that a lot of teams don't really take advantage of.
If the Seahawks were going to, let's say in this scenario, they flip three picks in a 7 or 8. If they were going to use one of those on a late round guy to take a flyer on, who do you think is worth, you know, spending a day 3 pick on for Seattle?
Jamie Newman from Wake Forest. He's one guy that I think now he has some development to do. It was unfortunate that we weren't able to see him last year, and there were some questions about why he left Georgia in the middle of training camp. But I think he's a player that you would really like to stash and develop behind Russell Wilson. And, you know, there's some steam about Russ at the time of him getting traded and him having all these demands and all these other things of where you have that young quarterback behind him, like a Jamie Newman. I think he's one player that you really would be really intriguing later on down the line, maybe 2 or 3 years from now.
I'm going to put you on the spot, man. I know you like to do your research on these guys. You didn't get to talk to a lot of these guys in person, I'm sure, but did you find a story or two with a guy, like a background that just really inspired you or was just really interesting when you're evaluating guys this offseason?
Ooh, you really did put me on the spot.
I know. I'm sorry, man. I remember you gave us a good one last year, so I was like, I know he's got another good one this year.
I don't have one this year with the guy that, like, immediately comes to mind, just because you really find out a lot of that stuff doing those combine interviews. Like last year, we saw Kenneth Murray, like he saved somebody from a car accident or something like that. He was up on the podium talking about a lot of that stuff. So that's really where I get a lot of my stories from, as far as just doing more background information and things of that nature. Of course, like with COVID, I wasn't able to do a super deep dive like I was normally able to do with some of these guys. So I don't have a gut-wrenching story or anything like that about any of these guys this year, unfortunately.
It's all right. We'll find one after draft.
Exactly right. Yeah,
so the Seahawks definitely are going to find a guy who, like, whose family escaped the war in Ethiopia or something like that.
Matter of fact, Kwity Paye. You reminded me about that one. So Kwity Paye, he actually was, I think he was born during the Liberian Civil War, if I'm not mistaken. And then him, his mom, and his brother moved to Rhode Island, and he was like, I couldn't even point out Rhode Island to you on the map back then. So he's a player that did have a very interesting backstory. He was an immigrant at the time as well, and they were able to obtain the citizenship that they were able to they were required to get when they came over here. So Kwity Paye definitely has a very interesting story. That's one guy, once you said war, that really popped up in my mind. So yeah, he definitely has an interesting backstory.
What school is he from?
Michigan. He's an edge rusher from Michigan.
You know, we didn't, you know, I'm gonna put you on the spot again. Sorry about this. Here we go. We didn't talk about some other spots like running back, tight end, or like edge. We don't need to get into all of those, but if of positions like that, maybe even linebacker, who's a guy that's on your radar that may fit for the Seahawks, any of these other spots we didn't, you know, talk about?
Running back, just because, you know, Seattle loves to draft them. Trey Sermon is one guy that I think they could like a lot. Now, I'm not necessarily saying they will end up drafting him, you know, in the fourth round, which I think probably where he'll end up going. But he's one player that I think they'll like a lot. There's plenty of linebackers in this class that they're going to have. I think at 56, there's going to be a lot of guys there for them. Jabril Cox from LSU is one player that I think they'll like a lot as far as the athletic upside that he does have. And then there's plenty of other players that they could go with as well. I mean, there's a lot of things that Seattle can do, man. It's just a matter of if they keep those three picks, which I would highly doubt right now. Okay. If it were me, I would trade back. I'd be looking to trade back from 56 just because, like I said, they don't have a super deep roster. I think they're pretty thin as far as at some positions. So I think it would be wise for Snyder to trade back.
Well, yeah, man. The Seahawks are so unpredictable. Like, we're going to talk all this about their big needs in interior and receiver and corner, and they're going to take a running back at 56. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, we've seen this happen before.
Shy Penny special.
How surprised were you with the Jordan Brooks pick last year?
I was surprised. I like Jordan Brooks, but first round, I did not see that coming at all with him. And, you know, every year there's a big surprise as far as a player that does end up going in the first round. There's going to be a surprise this year, especially with everything being impacted by COVID.
Mike said it first. Hey, they're going to draft some running back or something that we don't really think they need at this point in time, and that's what happens. We're used to it.
Honestly, their first
LJ Collier was the same.
Yeah.
Just random, man. So random.
Honestly, between Rashad, LJ, and Jordan, I think I've been blown away by their first pick the last 3 years. I don't think it's ever made sense to – actually, no, LJ made some sense, but it was how early he went. Like, I'm shocked every year. Did you get one of those right?
I think I got
Will Dissly or Rasheem?
Yeah, it was Will Dissly. I got Will Wright, and I think it was Rasheem. I think I got two out of the seven.
Hey, that's not bad. That's
you know, I'm throwing lotto tickets here, man. Let me see if I can get a big one. I got two.
All right, Joe, before we get you out of here, man, anything you want to plug, anything coming up on the podcast, any mock drafts or anything coming out that everyone needs to be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so I'm releasing my final top 100 big board next Monday on the draftnetwork.com, of course. Putting up daily podcasts with the Read Option podcast. Make sure you guys go check that out. And then I'm releasing positional rankings every day as well as far as updates. So be on the lookout for all that stuff, thedraftnetwork.com. We have a great website going as far as articles every day. And then we also have a mock draft machine as well. So if you want to put yourself in the shoes of John Snyder, And you want to trade back from those three spots, or, you know, if you just want to take players at those three spots, you're able to do that as well. But the great thing about our mock draft machine is that not only are you clicking on the players, but also you can read scouting reports about them as well.
Yeah, no, I couldn't sleep one night, and I was up. I was on it on the mock draft simulator, man. I love it. I love the work. I tell people I'm a draft phony. Like, I don't know anything until like the combine. And then that's when I really catch up between you and the homie Dane Brugler that we have at The Athletic with his stuff. Like, I feel like a genius by draft night. By draft weekend, I'm like, yeah, that dude's a bust. That's a reach. And I didn't know who that kid was 2 months before, but thanks to the work that you guys do, man, it's great stuff, man. We appreciate you, you know, jumping on with us, man. You ever need anything from us, you let me know. Thank you guys for tuning in to this latest episode of the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. Again, powered by The Athletic. We got a lot of draft coverage we're going to come bring you guys the next few weeks. But make sure you guys, again, go check out all of Jordan's stuff on thedraftnetwork.com. Thank you for tuning in with us. We will catch you guys next time. We're out. From a time to your bag and a color on your lip, yeah, you're plenty of
fifties. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.